Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to today's Caffeine for the Soul. And today I'm continuing my conversation with Mara Gleason. Obviously, given the title of today's episode, Being Mugged by God, Mara shares a story that some people might find disturbing. If you listen to her, you'll see that she does not find it disturbing. In fact, quite the opposite. When I first heard the story, I found it quite extraordinary, and I hope you'll find it extraordinarily hopeful. So, Mark, you tell a story in the book, and I remember the first time I read it just being blown away by it, because I've heard about things like your experience of, I guess I'll call it the mugging. I don't know what you know what you call it, but where people do have this extraordinary spiritual experience in the midst of a physical seeming crisis. But I'd never actually met somebody who'd been through it, and I wonder if you could share the story, and then just also what it opened up for you.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Since the book came out, I've gotten so many emails and Facebook messages of people sharing their version of that story with me, and that they've never heard someone else tell it, and how there's a universal commonality to those stories, which is interesting. But
yeah.
That's another topic. I told this story because I didn't really realize until later how profound and simple what I experienced in that moment was. And like I said, I kind of tucked it away because I couldn't understand it until later. But essentially what happened is at 20 years old, I was doing a study abroad program in Buenos Aires, Argentina, and me and a couple of girlfriends were walking after dinner from where we'd had dinner to a tango bar that we wanted to go to see a show or whatever. And there was one street that was a little bit quieter. It didn't have restaurants, bars on it. And while we were walking on that street, just going along chatting, as you do, three girlfriends at 20 years old, this motorbike came kind of out of seemingly out of nowhere and rode up on the sidewalk where we were walking, cut us off, and the guy on the back jumped off and grabbed me. And the other two girls ran so that they wouldn't get grabbed. So I found myself suddenly in a situation I'd never been in before, where I was getting mugged. And I tell it in the story because it was so interesting how my head stayed in its normal Mara mode up until the very last minute. Where I saw the man who had grabbed me and was holding me really tightly by the arm, I saw him reach down his pants. And I remember thinking in a very, you know, like exactly like my voice sounds like, oh geez, okay, here we go. And I had assumed he was about to expose himself to me or try to rape me or something. I just assumed that what was about to happen was going to be sexual in nature because of where his hand was going. And I remember thinking kind of like, all right, I can handle this. It's not going to be good, but I can.
Should have gone to Dublin. I knew I should have gone to Dublin.
Yeah, because that was my other possible choice. And then all of a sudden, I felt the tip of a gun on my temple, and I kind of like flash, and I saw for a moment, oh, he just pulled a gun out of his pants and there's a gun in my head. And in that moment where I realized there was a gun to my temple, all of my Mara world just went silent. It went completely quiet. And I say this in the book because I really want to be honest about it. I'm trying to explain it now, and it's so indescribable, really. So every time I share this story, I feel a little bit like, I'm not really doing this justice. Because I'm in my little Mara world again, using my little Mara thinking to describe this story. So I really can't explain it. But what I took from that experience is that everything that my little Mara mind normally thinks about, and I realized in that moment when I went silent, how much stupid shit is floating around my head most of the time. I mean, everything from, you know, the small mundane, like, oh, I don't like this toenail polish, I should change it, to, you know, what do I want to do with my life, to, am I a good enough person? Should I lose 5 pounds? What do I want to do tomorrow? I don't understand why I have this rash on my tongue. Like all of the stupid stuff that floats around in your mind all the time. And the moment that you realize you're a trigger moment away from having your life ended, you just don't care. And it's not a personal choice. It's just the irrelevancy of your normal thinking is so apparent, it just stops. That's my take on it. And what I described is when my Mara yip yapper, my little constant noisy thinking, went silent, I had this very profound experience of feeling the energy of life without the fragmentation of my own identity, my own ideas, my own yip yapper. Mm-hmm. And it was so big and so peaceful. And I describe it, and I never had that experience before or since. I've experienced versions or variations of it since, but certainly never to that degree. But it felt like a super knowing. And I remember later when I learned the principles and I heard Sid Banks talk about all humans hold the knowledge of all things. They just don't realize it. Mm. I think for a moment, because I didn't have anything standing in the way in terms of my own thinking, I got to experience the knowledge of all things.
Well, I thought one of the extraordinary bits of the story to me was that it sounded as though for a moment, so did he.
Well, and that was what was really cool, is it started out as me having this experience. And then I remember, it's so bizarre, but I remember the more I kind of, I don't even want to say let, it was so impersonal, but the more I kind of went there and sort of went with this experience, all of the lines that we normally see started to blend together. So there was this tree next to us growing out of the sidewalk. And I remember having the experience of knowing that previously that had been a tree, but right now it was just an energy. And it was all just a flow. Mm. And then I looked to him and I noticed the same thing was happening with he and I, is that I had very firmly seen the separation between his hand on my arm and my arm. But then as I was having this experience, that separation went away. And then I looked into his eyes and I realized he was having this experience too. And I don't, like, again, I can't, even as I'm saying it, I'm like, doesn't make sense. It sounds like an acid trip, or like, well, you know,
yeah.
It somehow sounds so made up, but I know as it was happening, there was absolutely nothing made up about it. And what was really cool is that when it became shared, I knew that he knew we were having this shared experience. And I knew because we were kind of one in the same in that moment. It felt like we were very much in a shared experience, a shared knowing. Mm-hmm. And I was overwhelmed by how connected I felt to him and how much love I felt for him. But again, not a personal Mara idea of love.
Yeah. And not a good person, oh, I forgive you kind of a love.
Right. No, not at all. It wasn't like, let me help you, you struggling poor man who's holding me. No, it was completely bigger than that, more impersonal than that. And I think it came in the space of no thought. And I shared that story in the book because I realized the only way separation exists for human beings is via thought. It slices and dices our experience into these concepts and these separate forms. And I'm a person, you're a person. I have thinking about you as a person. I can like you or not like you. And you multiply that by a billion thoughts a day. And you look at there, you get humans and societies and inequalities and pain and suffering and love and joy and everything else. But without any of that in that moment, he and I were just an energy, which is the energy of all things.
And I guess I don't know if you've ever read The Varieties of Religious Experience. William James was exploring exactly this. He didn't use yip yapper. I'm sure had he had that phrase, he would have. But of people who'd had these extraordinary, what, you know, he termed religious experiences in the midst of near death experiences. And in fact, a lot of the writing of extreme athletes, free climbers, base jumpers, they do it for their version of this. I don't know what you'd call it, the oneness connection to spirit, God, like that actually is a universal. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, most of us don't willingly put ourselves into context where we can experience it.
Right.
What's your relationship with that now? Like not the incident, but that energy, that knowing, that, because you said you've never really experienced it like that since. I don't even know what the question is, but maybe you do.
Well, no, I mean, and that kind of answers what you're talking about earlier, is I was so delighted when I came across a way of talking about the human mind and that relationship between that spiritual energy and then what we create in our minds and what we experience in the world, that when I came across that there were principles that could describe that, I was so delighted for two reasons. Well, I was delighted for that reasons, but in the context of this particular conversation, is I remember the distinct moment where I realized that those principles explained what happened to me in that moment of getting mugged, very simple terms. Because I literally tried to talk to one person about it after it happened. It was the next day. I told my boyfriend, who was back in New York, and he immediately misinterpreted it and told me all the things I did wrong and, what are you crazy? You should have just put in your wallet. I'm like, oh, no, I don't think you understand what I'm explaining.
No, I was mugged by God. Okay, that's we're not on the same page here.
The point at which I was choosing to do any of these things was not the equation. So you telling me I chose wrong, it's not really making sense to me. So I kind of just tucked it away. And I remember being a little bit sad about tucking it away, because it had been such a beautiful experience. I wanted to be able to talk to someone about it, or someone I loved about it, but I just couldn't. It was bigger than me. I didn't know what to do with it. So I just went, whatever, I'm just putting this in the crazy things that happen to me category that I'm going to go to my grave with. So when I came across these principles, it was this wonderfully comforting moment to know, oh, there's actually a logic that explains what happened to me that makes it make sense in very simple terms. Like, we experience thought, but thought is kind of like the mediator between this experience of energy and intelligence that all humans are part of. But we get it sifted through the filters of our own thinking. And then that's what we live in, is this kind of, you know, filtered, personalized version of that energy. And I just loved that suddenly had an explanation. Mm. And even cooler was that you could help point people toward that experience without them having to have a gun to their head. So,
which is a big bonus.
It is. Because you couldn't do a fake version, you know, you can't bring people like, at a carnival, have a gun to your head, because, you know, if you know, then it's not going to happen. So scaring people with random fake muggings wouldn't be a nice thing to do to humanity. But the idea that you could learn about the nature of the mind and how we are all a part of this. I don't even like using the words, frankly, divine or spiritual, because I think it's misinterpreted often.
Yeah.
By people who are phobic of those words, but really just that outside of your little thinking, there's this greater energy. And since I've been learning these principles for myself and pointing people in the direction of that, which is why the rest of the book is very normal human everyday stories, is because you catch glimpses of the beautiful feeling that comes when you are less lost in the yip yapper. And more kind of open to being part of that bigger energy, bigger flow behind life.
You can order your copy of One Thought Changes Everything on amazon.co.uk, amazon.com, in fact, Amazon in pretty much every country where there's an Amazon. And you can learn more about Mara and the work that she is doing at onesolutionglobal.org. In the next installment of our conversation, we'll be exploring what it is to slow down to the speed of life. Until then, have fun, learn heaps, and we'll speak with you soon.